Good evening. Welcome. It's Eric Erickson here. News 95.5 AM 750 WSB, the nation's most listened to news talk station. Welcome aboard this Monday, around 9 after the hour. Okay, we got, believe it or not, I've been doing my best to avoid the topic other than the beginning of the show. There is a lot here, though, with Mike Pence in the state today. So let's just go through the headlines of the campaign cycle. Right now, Hillary Clinton up 6 points in the Real Clear Politics polling average. But Donald Trump today kind of flipped the tables on Hillary Clinton, issuing a health care challenge. She wants Trump to release all of his health care records, particularly after his doctor admitted the other day that he wrote the letter to the media in like 5 minutes waiting for a limousine to pick him up. So the Clinton campaign came out charging over the weekend wanting Trump to release all of his health care records. Well, Hillary hadn't released her health care records. So the Trump campaign today issued a challenge that they will release all of his health care records at the same time if Hillary Clinton releases her medical records. A coordinated release of medical records. Thus far, the Clinton campaign has not responded. Now, a number of people have noticed, other than for this health care thing, the Clinton campaign has been rather silent. They really haven't said a whole lot in the last couple of weeks. There is a reason for that now, I am told, and it actually does kind of make some sense. The logic behind the Clinton camp is that if your opponent is setting himself on fire, there's no reason for you to do anything to distract from it. They have calculated that the ongoing constant media coverage of the Trump campaign, particularly the immigration flip-flops and whatnot the last couple of weeks, that this is all beneficial to Hillary Clinton, so her campaign has decided to stay on the down low, do absolutely nothing, and let Trump control the media cycle. Their calculation, and I do think they're right, and I think all of you recognize they're right. The Trump campaign certainly thinks they're right because they're complaining about the amount of press coverage they're getting. The Clinton calculation is that the press coverage of Trump is going to be so bad that they might as well go for it, let him get all the press coverage. Speaking of bad, latest polling has Donald Trump 25 points below Mitt Romney with Catholic voters. He is the only presidential candidate in American history to pick a fight with the Pope. And it's showing Catholic voters do not like Donald Trump. Black voters, the national polling average has him at 1%. But, there is a funny one. All of you, regardless of whose side you're on, you can laugh at this one. A pollster went through and decided, 60% of Americans hate Hillary, 60% of Americans hate Trump. And he just asked a question: how many people actually like both Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton? How many people like them both? Any idea what percentage of Americans like them both? Okay, Donald Trump's support among black voters is at 1 to 2%. The number of people who like Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton both, 1 to 2%. That's right. Roughly, 2% on the nose, but plus or minus a couple percentage points. So either nobody or only about 3 to 4% of people actually like them both together. Just consider that this is the election cycle we're in. Oh, goodness gracious. Another story here to delve into. You're starting to hear the media stories, and the media does this every 4 years. They want to know how the candidates are prepping for the debates. Now, you should understand the main reason the media wants to understand why the candidates are prepping for debates, because this is essentially a story about the media. They've all got pools in their offices as to who the debate moderators are going to be. There was a morning consult poll that Anderson Cooper and Megyn Kelly are the front runners, but there's no guarantee. The campaigns will negotiate. Now, what happens? Typically, and it's always been James Baker for the Republicans, at least it's been James Baker since Reagan. Think about that for a minute. James Baker, Ronald Reagan's chief of staff, Treasury Secretary, George W. Bush's Secretary of Treasury, Secretary of State, he has literally negotiated the Republican side of the presidential debates since the 1980s, and he's not doing it this time. A lot of institutional wisdom gone. In the past, they've always claimed the Republicans got a little bit of an advantage, even Romney to a degree, in the Obama setup because of that. But, They're not going to have him this time. Meanwhile, the Clinton campaign is relying on a guy named Ron Klain. He was a Clinton advisor in the Clinton administration. He now teaches a course on presidential debates at Georgetown or George Washington University, one of the two in D.C. So he's going to be the guy who does the negotiations. Now, I see some of you saying, well, you thought it was said so. No. So there's a presidential debate commission, and the presidential debate commission sets up the time frame of the debates. We're going to do them on these days, and we're going to do them at these universities, and we're going to handle the press contacts and the media and all of that. But the campaigns themselves sit down to decide how they want to do the debates. Now, they submit a list of agreed moderators to the Presidential Debate Commission. The Presidential Debate Commission signs off on who they want to be the moderators. I believe there are going to be three presidential debates this time. There will be one vice presidential debate. The first debate happens September 29th at Hofstra University in New York. The last one, I believe, it happens in Las Vegas. And in between, there will be several others. But the campaigns negotiate. Are they going to sit down? Are they going to stand up? Will there be stools? Will there be podiums? Will they be allowed pieces of paper? How much time does each candidate have? How much time does each candidate have to respond? And what is the engagement level of the moderator? Will the debates be universal in topic, or will they be focused? Will there be a general debate, a foreign policy debate, a domestic policy debate? What about the vice presidential debate? The vice presidential debates are typically, they sit around a table. That's how it's been in the past number of years. That's not required, though. All of these things are subject to negotiations between the campaigns. Once they work out that framework and provide a common list of debate moderators, then the Presidential Debate Commission puts everything in stone, sets everything out, and essentially follows the wishes of the campaigns and does the reach out to the moderators. Now, you've had, you know, the Candy Crowley situation 4 years ago. She was accused of helping the Obama administration in the Benghazi situation. You had Martha Raddatz appeared to be pro-Biden. At least the Republicans thought so. In the past, you've had the Democrats accuse moderators of being pro-Republican, although not as common as Republicans going the other way. And I think it's true. I mean, Gwen Ifill, for Pete's sake, she was a debate moderator. She actually wrote this hagiographic novel about the rise of Barack Obama, but claims she could be impartial. All of these things are going to go on in the next couple of weeks. I suspect we're not going to see a Megyn Kelly moderated debate. I think it would be awesome. I think she'd be very fair, but given her history with Trump, I don't know that that'll happen. Nonetheless, there you have it. This is going to be the big debate. Now, when we come back, we'll move on. We won't mention the campaigns again, other than Hillary Clinton in the second hour. There's some stuff out there about the Clinton Foundation. But Colin Kaepernick, we got to get into this story. Everybody else is leading with it. I wanted to get through the headlines. There's a lot of them. But now we got to get to that story when we come back. Welcome back. It's Eric Erickson here. I'm only going to touch on a particular story here, and I don't want to delve into it further. The Huma Abedin, Anthony Weiner situation. If you haven't heard, although it's been all over the news, Anthony Weiner was again caught texting naughtily with someone, or tweeting or something, and he had his kid, his son, in the room with him. He clearly has a problem. There is a lot of ink spilled, and I myself have been critical of Huma Abedin, but I think it is commendable that she has worked very hard, mostly on behalf of her son, or for her son, to keep her marriage together. And today she's announced that after this latest transgression, they are going to separate. I've seen people try to defend the Trump campaign today, gloating about this. I've seen people try to convince defend Trump on the Dwayne Johnson, The Rock tweet over the weekend. I don't even want to bring that up. I don't want to dwell on that campaign. I don't think you can cheer on, gloat, or politicize a marriage breakup. I think it is tragic all around, and I want no part of it. And I do think it's commendable. She worked very hard to keep her marriage together under extraordinarily difficult circumstances, given both the spotlight on her and all of her husband's transgressions. I feel very bad for their kid. So that's all I want to say about that. And not going to take any calls on the issue tonight, just because there's no sense in. It's always, I think, sad when a marriage breaks apart, regardless of the cause. Now, Facebook. We'll get to the Kaepernick and the 49ers, but just here we got a short segment, and I got to mention this. So there's a big headline today. Facebook has had to take down a story in its trending topics that Megyn Kelly was fired by Fox News. The story was false. It was spread through thousands of people on Facebook before it got out of the trending topics. Now, I actually think the headline is different. The headline should be different. Right after Facebook fired its human curators, this happened. See, Facebook had the human curators. The people on the right were convinced there was bias. Yes, there was some bias. No, I don't think it was intentional. I think Facebook needed to hire more conservatives to be able to balance out the biases of liberals. They didn't do that. They decided to fire everybody and let computer algorithms do it. And so what did the computer algorithm do on the first day on the job? It picked up the Megyn Kelly story. All of this is to say, the robot army isn't there yet to be able to figure out what's true, what's false, what's right, what's wrong, and how to enslave us if they can't even figure out a false headline. My goodness. But yeah, that's what Facebook gets when it fires all the humans. Welcome back. Eric Erickson here, News 95.5 AM 750 WSB. The phone number, 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. Colin Kaepernick. You know, I used to call him Kaepernick. I'm sure you've heard by now he didn't want to stand up for the national anthem. You know, listen, it is his absolute right to not stand up. He wants to protest the flag because he thinks that this country that has made him a multimillionaire being a terrible football player is something to be ashamed of. I don't understand people who are ashamed of our country. I really don't. And it seems to me that the people who are ashamed of the country, who are most likely, like Kaepernick, to be ashamed of the country, are people who have never lived anywhere else. So they have no benchmark. If they were to live in Russia, let Colin Kaepernick go play on a soccer team, a football team in Russia, and not stand up for the national anthem and see what happens. Let him go to Saudi Arabia and do it there. Let him go wherever and do it, even to the United Kingdom or to Canada or to France, anywhere else in the Western world, and see the reaction compared to here. Where here, you've got a bunch of white guilt peddlers on ESPN talking about, he's so brave for standing up to the country by sitting down. It's so ironic he's standing up by sitting down. All we white people should be ashamed. We should be proud of. If you're not proud, you're a racist. Listen, I have given up on ESPN, as I have mentioned a number of times. I can barely bring myself to watch SportsCenter anymore. But the falling all over themselves praise of Kaepernick for doing this. He's not putting his money where his mouth is. He's just sitting down as if that's going to get him something. He is not Rosa Parks. He is not anybody who sat at a Woolworth lunch counter. He is a overpaid, not very good quarterback for a team in a very liberal city sitting down. What is more commendable, actually, are the members of the 49ers team who are willing to stand up and put their hand over their heart in San Francisco for the American flag. Because in San Francisco, the norm is what Kaepernick is doing, because they're all ashamed of the United States. They have no appreciation for the country. What I find interesting is that the NFL is perfectly okay with Kaepernick doing this, but they don't want the Dallas Cowboys to do anything to honor the police officers who were murdered in Dallas. No, that would be political, according to the National Football League, for them to put decals agreed to by the players by the way, agreed to by the players and the team to honor the police officers murdered in Dallas. The NFL said no, too political. But they are perfectly happy with this guy doing what he's doing, sitting down. That's fine. He ought to stay seated down. Seated down, however you want to say it. He ought to stay down. The NFL or the 49ers would probably be better on the field without him. You know, I got to say, before I go to break, one of the funniest things about this Kaepernick story I've seen are the number of people, including columnists at ESPN and an NFL columnist, who's basically an NFL propagandist. And all of them have had to admit that he's not a very good football player anymore. And that he's so brave for what he did. It's just sitting down is so brave. Why? Because he's now going to be forced to endure the criticisms about his patriotism and about his football playing skills. Yes, yes. That, and listen, I read a lot of articles about this to form my opinion. Not that I needed to form my opinion about this, but, you know, as I've said multiple times, I pay much more attention to college football than I do the NFL. A lot of them are overpaid anyway. Now, I know some of you disagree very passionately with me, and I realize there are a couple members of the Falcons who listen to this program, and I'm going to get emails from them, and they're going to ridicule me again, one, for my superficial knowledge of football. But I stand by the statement that you got a bunch of college kids playing football, not making millions of dollars, the NCAA making a mint off of them and them not allowed to do it. And they're trying to do it, many of them, because they want into the NFL. I find that, yes, I concede that the professionalism and the conduct of the games in the NFL are so much better. But I still just think that I like college football better, and I'm sorry to those of you who are on a local NFL team who are upset with me. I have had this discussion with you before, but nonetheless, I recognize the level of professionalism, but I do think it is worth noting that in all these criticisms, or praises, I guess, because there haven't been a ton of criticism out there in places like ESPN. There is other places, but you're not going to see the ESPN criticize anybody in the NFL these days, given what's happened to some of the people on ESPN. But to say, it's going to make him have to listen to the criticisms that he's not a very good football player. Really? Come on, people. That's just that whole line of it. I mean, the guy, listen, he's not a traitor. He's just dumb. He's ignorant. He has no idea what it's like in the rest of the world. If he did know what it was like in the rest of the world, then he probably wouldn't be doing that. So, did you guys hear Taylor Swift showed up today at jury duty in Nashville? Skip the VMA Awards. By the way, I gotta say, I don't keep up with the VMA Awards, but I did think it was really cool that instead of using banners around the stadium and whatnot, MTV had a helicopter essentially drag a movie screen behind it, and then had another helicopter projecting onto that screen live shots. I thought that was kind of cool, but yeah, I mean, we are Atlanta's Evening News with Eric Erickson. This is a news story. Taylor Swift, who my daughter loves, showed up at jury duty. That's all. That's the whole story. the bigger story out there, I am so not a fan of police gun buybacks because, I mean, they are a complete waste of money. The people who turn in guns tend to be people who have old, unused guns. They're not the criminals. And there's a picture the Minnesota Gun Owners Caucus has put out of someone who allegedly submitted a 12-gauge shotgun with a 23-inch barrel, and it's basically the barrel of a gun or a pipe attached to a piece of wood with duct tape, and they're claiming it was. I don't actually believe that was traded in, but, I mean, the moral of the story is these gun buybacks programs, they're just the people, criminals aren't going to hand in their guns. Law-abiding citizens with antique, broken guns, they hand them in and they get money. It's a waste of taxpayer dollars, but it makes liberals feel good. And that is the winning policy in the country, is if it makes a liberal feel good, it gets done. When we come back, a big story. I feel like I'm a trendsetter on this story because I've been talking about Russia and it's psyops for about a year now, and suddenly it's starting to make national headlines. I'll tell you what I'm talking about in a few minutes. Welcome back. It's Eric Erickson here. I guess I should say something about Gene Wilder passing. Man, I had a buddy of mine actually email me during the break and say, wow, did you hear he died? I actually was Googling to see if he was alive a couple of weeks ago. He's apparently been in declining health for a while, but man, what a guy. Some of his shows with Richard Pryor and Mel Brooks and Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, of course. I mean, that is the movie I think of growing up with him. Anyway, he has died. Oh, wow. So, complete switch of subject here. I guess I should spend a few more minutes telling you. So, Mike Pence is going to be in the metro area tonight. There will be a Secret Service detail with him. There will be traffic and whatnot. I think they're going to Gwinnett County here in a little bit, about an hour. So, just be mindful of traffic in the area. They were down in Middle Georgia earlier today, landed at the Macon Airport about 12:25 or so, and headed down to Perry for an event at 2. A big crowd down there. Now, let me just mention the dynamics of this as to why they're here. And it's twofold. One, the big donors in Georgia haven't stepped up. Republicans have donors that they can count on every election cycle, or at least they used to. And in this election cycle, a large number of prominent donors haven't stepped up, including a good number in Georgia. So they're trying to rally the faithful. They're doing really well with small dollar donors, which is typically a good sign for a campaign. And they're also somewhat on defense in Georgia. They're on defense with, in the polling average, Clinton is a point ahead of Trump in Georgia based on the polling average. I actually don't believe it. There is another story today about why Georgia is a swing state, but they did this in 2012 and they did it in 2014 as well. And I just, yeah, Georgia's going to become a swing state. Demographically, it's bound to happen. But I don't think it's going to happen in the next, say, maybe 2018 for that governor's race. But I think it's going to be more like 2022 or so. I'm not worried about the Trump campaign losing Georgia. I don't think it'll happen. But anyway, they're making headlines there today. Pence is a good guy. Governor of Indiana, I've known him for a long time. In fact, I've got a Russell Kirk book, The Conservative Mind, that he actually gave me when I first started Red State, actually, with friends of mine. He reached out, read, and gave me a copy of The Conservative Mind, told me I needed to read it, that if I was going to be a writer in conservative politics, I needed to really understand conservatism, and it thus began my epic reading journey. So anyway, I will shift gears now. You know, last week, I did not intend to spend as much time as I did on Friday talking about the alt-right. And we had a number of phone calls to the program from people wanting to know why I was talking about them, why I was letting Hillary Clinton dictate the coverage. It was a huge news story on Friday. We are Atlanta's Evening News with Eric Erickson, and it was a huge story on Friday. A lot of people don't know what the alt-right is. But I had been talking about them for more than a year because I've noticed a trend. And along with talking about the alt-right, you can't talk about that story without talking about this story. And that's Russia's influence in the American election. And it's not just here. It's happening all over the world now. And it's starting to get mainstream media attention. In ways I was talking about this story. In fact, I looked back at the resurgent, and the first I wrote about this topic was in January, and I've written about it several times since, and I tried to go back into my notes. I keep a notebook of shows and tried to go back, and I found one reference last year to Vladimir Putin over the weekend that I mentioned in his growing PSYOPs campaign against the West. So here's what you need to know, and it is relevant here because they've targeted Atlanta. In fact, that was actually one of the occurrences that where I referenced it is targeting Atlanta, Vladimir Putin and the Russian PSYOPs team. Now, let's go way back. Sun Tzu, The Art of War. He said that all war is, in essence, deception. And one of the things that Sun Tzu made very clear in his now famous book that if you're in a war college, you're going to read, everyone should read it. It actually is fascinating reading. But if you are disadvantaged numerically, PSYOPs and spies, they can give you an advantage. If you have good, dedicated spies, they can seed distrust and disruption and make your soldiers distrust you and make your citizenry disruptive. Vladimir Putin and Russia do not have the money to confront NATO. They do not have the money to confront the United States. They do not have the money to confront the West. So what he's doing, and this was his specialty when he was at the KGB, is a disinformation campaign. Now, everybody has a disinformation campaign. The United States does it too. We just don't do it with the gusto that the Russians are doing it. And this came to bear, for example, Sweden was thinking of signing a pact with NATO. All it was a pact with NATO where they would cooperate militarily as need be. But reports started surfacing in Sweden that NATO, as part of the deal, they were going to park missiles in Sweden. They were going to build bases in Sweden. That Sweden would be run afoul of agreements with Russia and others. And it turns out that it was a Kremlin operation. It was a complete Kremlin operation. None of it was true. We've seen this in this country. This is going to offend some of you, but it's true. It has been proven and well documented. A lot of the original voices about Agenda 21, for those of you who don't know, people claim that's the UN agenda to take over America and have a one world government. A lot of that is peddled by the Russian PSYOPs team. Initially it was. And then it takes on a life of its own, and they don't have to. We get people calling into the program all the time who genuinely believe Agenda 21 is coming and certain politicians support it when that's not actually true. But they believe, we're not taking your phone calls. No, stop it. Stop. No. Hang up the phone. No. This isn't debatable. But see, it gets to a point where it becomes debatable. So, for example, in this country, the Russians have gone all in with Trump. That doesn't mean that the campaign has anything to do with him. What it means is that the Russians, and they're willing to talk about this in open, they view him as a destabilizing force, a great unknown. They know what they're getting with Hillary Clinton. They don't know what they're getting with him. They think that therefore means he will be destabilizing. So they are online. They've got a ton of accounts, a ton of Twitter accounts, a ton of Facebook accounts that look like real people. For example, when we had the Ebola outbreak, there were a number of Twitter accounts of people in Atlanta. They had tweets, lengthy tweets for weeks on end about Atlanta. They had pictures of their families. They had pictures of Atlanta. And they started saying things like, I work at the CDC, and it appears Ebola has gotten out of the center. Or, I know someone who works at the CDC who says they've had their first patient come in from the city contracting Ebola. And we got calls into this program at the time. Have you heard that someone has contracted Ebola in Atlanta? Because they saw it on social media. It was a Russian operation. The New York Times did a profile on the hackers in Russia who work at a place. They work at this nondescript facility in Moscow and others in St. Petersburg. And all they do is they troll Westerners trying to convince them that the world is upside down. It's a fascinating thing. And Putin is doing it because he doesn't have the money to confront us directly. So he's trying to sow seeds of discord. And it's not just here, and it's bigger than you might suspect. So welcome back. Talking about this Russian PSYOPs, I don't have a lot of time here. I went long in the last segment. But in Europe, for example, a lot of the Brexiteers were getting information from news sources that turned out to be Russian news sources running a propaganda campaign. Now, I support Brexit nonetheless, but a lot of the people in Britain were trading stories that were fabricated by the Russians. In France, the Le Pen organization, the nationalists in France, are backed by Russia. In Eastern Europe and in Greece, the nationalist movements are actually funded by the Russians. And the reason for this is because Vladimir Putin has calculated if he can get nationalism on the rise around the world, he can begin to break up alliances like NATO that directly threaten him. He can't take on NATO militarily or economically, so his goal is to break up NATO. And the way he's doing it is using social media to sow seeds of discord. Now, remember what I told you. There were a bunch of accounts that purported to be Atlantans who were documenting cases of Ebola that had made it into the city or around the southeast. One claimed to work at the CDC. Someone else claimed to have a relative at the CDC. Someone else heard on the news that there was an Ebola outbreak happening in Atlanta or in the southeast. There's something else you need to know about those Twitter accounts. They have been followed. They have not been deleted. They are still there. But you're going to have to hang around. Yeah, this is a tease. I don't have enough time. I'll tell you when we come back. Welcome back. Now, I wrote myself a note. Eric Erickson here, 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. That's the number. I wrote myself a note to remind me the topic, because I can't tell you how often I come back and I've forgotten the topic. So, Vladimir Putin, the PSYOPs, the Ebola accounts. If you're just tuning in, been talking about this story. There's one in the New York Times today. The Washington Post has now covered it. Fox News and CNN are covering it. The Russians are using social media and news services, fictitious news services that look real, to disrupt the West, to spread lies in the West, to have you believe things that are not true. A great example is Sweden trying to sign a deal with NATO. News services in Sweden and social media accounts in Sweden started spreading a bunch of stories about this deal with NATO, much of the content of which was not true, including claims that Sweden would have to start housing NATO nuclear missiles and NATO bases would be built in Sweden and they would be financially obligated to NATO. None of it was true, but it was passed around on Facebook pages in Sweden by people who believed it was true because it came from purported news services. One of the best examples here in this country, there are actually two really good examples. One is the Ebola situation. A number of accounts purporting to be from Atlanta and elsewhere in the southeast claiming there when the patients came back from Africa with Ebola and were housed at the CDC in Atlanta, a number of social media accounts started spreading rumors that there was an Ebola outbreak in the southeast. We here at this program started getting phone calls from listeners who had heard on social media or they thought they had seen in a news service wire somewhere that Ebola had made it out of the CDC and what the hell was going on. They were Russian hackers running social media accounts. The New York Times profiled them. They had an office in Moscow. They had an office in St. Petersburg. They called it the Bureau. And they did nothing but set up accounts to look like Americans. They had pictures of people that looked like their Twitter profiles. They had kids. They took pictures like those who claimed to be in Atlanta. There were pictures in their tweets of the Atlanta skyline, or they had been to certain restaurants or certain shops in Atlanta, made it look very much like they were from here. All of those accounts are now alt-right accounts supporting Donald Trump. Every single one of them. Every one of them. I'm not making that up, folks. I'm not like the Russians. If you go look for Ebola Atlanta on Twitter, you will find, go back to when it was happening here, you will find those accounts, and they're still active. Most, not all of them, some of them have been deleted. Most of them are still active, and now they're alt-right Trump supporters. Anti-Jew, anti-immigrant, very pro-nationalist, pro-Trump. Another example is the San Bernardino terrorist attack. If you go look, remember there was a report that came out that night of the name. They had the name of the shooter, and it was released on one of the news networks before it was quickly retracted. It came from a social media account. And I can't get into the actual pronunciations of the name. I can't remember it, but essentially the name of the person was the nickname of the Turkish president. Remember, the San Bernardino attack came only a short time, a few days, if not a week, after the Turks shot down a Russian military jet. And so this Twitter account that was, you know, reporters, you follow them, they follow you sort of thing, and this account was following these reporters, reporters were following in, and it leaked out. I live in San Bernardino, my husband's on the SWAT team, he says this is the name of the guy. And people in the media picked it up and ran with it until they had to retract it. It turns out that that account was a Russian account, and it is now a Trump account. You can go see, I've documented this one. You can go to theresurgent.com and find that one. But It's fascinating. And again, this isn't to say anything about the Trump campaign. It is to say that the Russians want to destabilize the West. They view, because Clinton is a known commodity, you don't actually know what you'll get with Trump. They view it as a destabilizing force. And so they're going all in, peddling stories, it seems, disruptively to help him. WikiLeaks hacked the DNC. They're releasing anti-Clinton stuff. They're doing this all over Europe. They're doing it in Australia, New Zealand as well. It's just fascinating that this is what they're doing. In the age of social media, they don't need an army to disrupt the West. All they need is a Twitter account. I'm just looking at social media. Yes, talking about it, looking at it, people upset. Listen, I can't talk about this story without talking about the presidential campaigns. It is not a story about the presidential campaigns. It is not a smear on one of the presidential candidates to point out that the Russian psyops teams are running accounts that support him. It has nothing to do with him. He's getting smeared by these accounts to a degree. But it is a relevant news story. It can't be avoided, and it puts everything in proper context. It's not a story that really can be denied, frankly. I get so upset now with people who I'm trying to talk about a legitimate news story. You can't avoid a particular name, Trump, and they go out of their minds. And it's not even a story about them, but there's relevant context there. This Putin thing. So a buddy of mine, Dan, on Twitter, left for the weekend. He wasn't on social media at all. Gone for 48 to 72 hours, moving his kid into college. Wasn't on Twitter. And what was so funny is he came back Monday morning, and a bunch of Trump accounts had started bashing him for a tweet he made a week ago. But they weren't Trump accounts. They were all obscure names that had put Trump in their title, and they were all essentially saying the same thing. It was a bunch of bots happening at 10:30 in the morning Moscow time when they did. It's fascinating that this is what Putin is doing. And now finally, I've been talking about this for a year, and finally the media is catching on that this is what Putin is doing. And this is why, with the story earlier today that I mentioned about Megyn Kelly being fired by Fox, it wasn't true, but the Facebook algorithm somehow made it the top news story. They had to remove it. They had gotten rid of all the humans, and that's what the computer did. We're going to start getting more and more of this stuff as we have fewer and fewer humans curating the news, and we're relying on machines. The Russians are going to be taking advantage of this stuff. You cannot believe everything you read on social media, and you better double down on remembering that, because even more craziness is coming thanks to the Russians' desperation to dismantle the Western alliances. This one, you know, I gotta mention Trump, and it's not a story about him, but it impacts him. This is not a ding on him or anything else. Lord help me, I'm ready for this campaign season to be over. Folks, there's a story out today that there are a number of PACs that have been created purportedly supporting Donald Trump. And they're scams. One of them is dinnerwithtrump.com or Dinner with Trump Pack. Another one is Stop Crooked Hillary 2016 or Stop Lying Hillary 2016. These are PACs purporting to help the Republican presidential candidate. They're actually being created by some Republican political consultants. And not a penny of the money is going to his campaign. So people are giving, take for the Dinner with Trump PAC. It is a PAC purporting if you give them a certain amount of money, they will arrange for you to have dinner with Donald Trump, and some senior citizens have been taken advantage of. You got to be wary. It's like these draft PACs. If you see a PAC saying draft so-and-so to run for Congress or governor or what have you, don't give them money. The moral of the story is give money to the RNC if you really want to. But give money to the candidate. Whoever your candidate is, write the check to them, not to one of these super PACs, because more and more super PACs are being created that are nothing but scams, taking advantage of you and your money. And this one has raised, I think I saw in the Politico, more than $100,000, and virtually 90% of it was spent on consulting firms owned by the person who created the PAC. It's just a flow through to buy them a beach house. So you are on warning. All right. We'll be back tomorrow evening. We're out of time here. You guys have a great night. I am off to fifth grade open house at school. God help me. Say a prayer.